It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Sometimes writing is a political act. Okay. How are you? How are your family and friends in Ukraine?
How am I doing? I'm not doing incredibly well, no.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do my best.
Days after the Russian army invaded Ukraine, when the whole world was trying to make sense of what was happening and how to respond, these words started circulating online. We lived happily during the war.
We lived happily during the war.
And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested.
But not enough.
But not enough. We opposed them.
We opposed them, but not enough.
But not enough. This is the beginning of a poem, a now famous poem, by Ilya Kaminsky, the Ukrainian-American poet. His is the voice many of us turned to again and again during those first weeks of war, when it was becoming clear that what was at stake in Ukraine was not only the future of one country, but a certain set of values or ideals. Democracy, self-determination, freedom of expression. And Ilya Kaminsky is a writer with a deep personal understanding of the political power of poetry.
Well, when people are powerless for so many hundreds of years, language becomes a weapon. Wheat is a weapon because that's what you have. You may not have guns. In fact, Ukraine doesn't have the guns to close the sky, and nobody is willing to do it, but people still have language.
A few things to know. Ilya Kaminsky grew up in the city of Odessa in Ukraine. He lost most of his hearing at age 4 during an illness. When he was 16, his family moved to the U.S., and that's when he learned English and began writing poetry. So, he is a very accomplished lip reader with an accent. Lean in and listen closely, because his words are so worth it.
We lived happily during the war. We lived happily during the war. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed. Around my bed, America was falling. Invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In a 6 month of a disastrous rain, in a house of money, in a street of money, in a city of money, in a country of money, our great country of money, we, forgive us, lived happily during the war.
That is such a scathing and beautiful poem.
Thank you.
What would you like readers to take from it?
What do I want readers to take? Well, in a poem, one hopes to create an experience in the reader. In this case, the hope of the poem is to help the reader to see their own complicity. I do kind of see irony that the citizens of American Empire are showing so much concern for the victims of the Russian Empire while America is regularly bombing other people's houses. And all the while it uses police brutality against its own citizens. Right this very moment. Who remembers Chechnya right now?
Yeah.
Putin used ballistic missiles to bomb the capital of Chechnya, the city of Grozny, into the ground around 1999-2000. The West shouted about it for about 5 minutes. And then we forgot. Why? Because oil and gas companies make money and their dealings with Putin. If we follow the dollar sign, we will see the root of the problem. Our country of money, the poem says. Our great country of money.
Yeah. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately, as I sit in the middle of one empire, the United States, and watch another empire, Russia, invade a small country, it seems to me that language and poetry in particular have always had something to say to push back against empire. You told a story of, it was in an essay you wrote in 2017, but I read it recently, about a poet and friend of yours, Boris was his first name. I'm sorry, I don't remember his last name.
Yeah, Boris Khersonsky is a wonderful poet from Odessa. Boris and Lyudmila Khersonsky, the husband and wife, and they're both poets. Very interesting thing happened in 2014 when Russia first invaded Ukraine. Boris Khersonsky at that time was the most known and beloved Russian language poet in Ukraine. And he said in public that today I am not going to speak Russian, I'm going to speak Ukrainian. And he began writing poems in Ukrainian. Wow. So it's amazing that a poet would refuse his own language. The story of his wife, in some way, Lyudmila Khersonsky, is even more interesting. Lyudmila Khersonsky was born in the country of Moldova. So Ukrainian was never her language. She had to learn Ukrainian in order to write poetry in it. Imagine if here in the United States, when our unfortunately President Donald Trump began to build a wall to separate the United States from our neighbors in Mexico, what if most American poets say, I refuse to speak English. I'm going to write poems in Spanish from now on. I'm going to learn a new language as protest. Just imagine that. It's an amazing thing to imagine, right?
Oh. Why is war the subject that you keep writing about or keep coming back to?
Up until I was 16, most of my childhood and adolescence happened when the Soviet Union was falling apart. Watching the country fall apart prepares one to be alert to crisis. It was a time when the door to our apartment was set on fire because we were Jewish. Hmm. Ukraine is a complicated place. Ukraine is also a place that is full of hope, especially the new generation of Ukrainians. They are more democratic than Western democracies. Or rather, they believe in democracy more than Western democracies do. They're very idealistic in a beautiful way, and they're prepared to fight for it.
Well, I'm so interested to read that you've been in touch with a lot of poets throughout this war, and you asked one poet what you could do to help, and he said, just send more poems because we're starting a literary journal. And I thought, they're starting a literary journal in the middle of a war? That's remarkable. But then when I thought about it, I thought, when else would we need poetry but during a war?
Well, the person that you're referring to, his name is Yevgeny Golubovsky. He is in his 80s. He is a journalist. Mm-hmm. All the way back to the middle of the 20th century, he met the widow of a poet, Osip Mandelstam. Her name was Nadezhda Mandelstam. Osip Mandelstam was a legendary poet who wrote a poem against Stalin's government and was sentenced to Siberia, where he died.
Yeah.
And his work was prohibited for decades. And so this man, Golubovsky, met Nadezhda Mandelstam, who gave him the copy of the poems written on cigarette paper. And he ended up working for a newspaper, and he published the poems. And the beautiful thing is, he's still here now. And he is starting a writing group for young people because he knows that it matters, that it does change. So yeah, that's a kind of human chain that we create, reciting words to each other sometime. Will that stop Putin? Maybe, maybe not, but it will help us to continue.
Does poetry give us some kind of speech, or can poetry say things that other forms of language can't? I mean, is that part of what makes poetry the thing we turn to so often during times of crisis, when it feels like what we're feeling or what we're going through, we can't somehow use ordinary language to express it? Poetry becomes the language that we use to break up whatever is frozen in us, whatever we cannot adequately express. But I don't know why poetry has the ability to do that.
Oh, I think you're beautifully answering your own question. I can only add to it by saying, poem is a spell. It casts a spell on us. It's a memorable speech that we remember when things get difficult. And that memorable speech offers us a balm, offers us a way to go on. You can't recite the whole novel of 400 pages, no matter how wonderful it is. You can't recite it to a person sitting next to you by heart. But you can a poem. It's a kind of a moment of awe, a moment of silence that we carry from one human body to another, that we transport by means of language.
And that's so beautifully phrased, Ilya. I'll just ask very simply, what keeps you writing now in the dark times?
I'm afraid on this planet there are always dark times. The question is whether or not we shut our eyes to them. The dark times happen all the time. Some people unfortunately have to go through wars, but we all lose parents, right?
Yeah.
We all see tragedy in one way or another. We all die. We don't get not to die, right?
Yeah.
The answer to this question was given by Brecht, Bertolt Brecht, a great poet of German language, who protested Nazis and was living in exile. When he wrote a little poem that went as the following. And in dark times, will there be singing? Yes, there will be singing about the dark times.
And in dark times, will there be singing? Yes, there will be singing about the dark times. That is so beautiful. Ilya, thank you so much for talking today.
Thank you, and thank you again for having me today. I'm grateful.
It's been such a joy. Thank you. Ilya Kaminsky is a hard of hearing, USSR-born, Ukrainian, Russian, Jewish, American poet, critic, translator, and professor. He's best known for his poetry collections, Dancing in Odessa, and Deaf Republic. In 2019, the BBC named him one of 12 artists who changed the world.